call the meeting to order. I think we have a quorum. Anyone approve the minutes? The minutes are before you. Anyone? You are here.
I move to approve the minutes.
Representative Fisher moves to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Approve the minutes. Okay, so since we have our chair here, maybe I'll turn things over to chair since she knows what's coming up.
Thank you. I really appreciate you filling in for me. I had to run back to my district and then get back here, so it's great to be with you all again. We do have one agenda item today, which is the overview of the housing initiatives that are within the Department of DEED, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. So it's probably be kind of a short meeting unless there's other things that people want to bring up as we meet today. But let's go ahead and start with that. I believe Kevin McKinnon and maybe whoever else would like to come forward. As we mentioned, there's a number of state agencies that have housing programs within them, and this is one of them. And so we want to hear about whatever's going on there and hopefully answer any questions members might have. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Executive Director of Business and Community Development at DEED. Happy to be here today to talk about DEED's involvement in housing as it relates to our mission of supporting individuals, businesses, and communities. Since 1983, DEED has received from the Housing and Urban Development Department of the federal government an award of community development block grant funds. In fiscal year 2013, we're hoping to receive about $16 million. And in fiscal year 12, we received $16 million as well. We'll see how that plays out here over the next several months. But essentially, we administer these funds from HUD and solicit competitive applications for cities and counties to apply for those funds through us. These funds are granted to non-entitlement cities and counties in Minnesota using the application process. The non-entitlement areas are generally outside of the Twin Cities metro area, seven county region, St. Louis County and Duluth, St. Cloud, Moorhead, Mankato, and Rochester. It's important to note that those communities, counties, get their own allocation from HUD and through the CDBG block grant program. Most of the grants are required to meet the federal objective of benefiting low to moderate income households and or individuals. There's formulas for that vary around the state. Generally, if you're a family of four making $40,000 or less, you pretty much are eligible to apply for these funds. Every year we file a yearly plan. It's called a consolidated plan with HUD on how we will administer the funds. And typically the way we have worked it the vast number of years is about 15% of the balance goes to economic development projects where we make grants to cities. The cities then pass that along to businesses in the form of a loan. The businesses must then hire 51% from low to moderate income. 30% of our annual CDBG award is also allocated to single-purpose projects. Those are housing projects, owner-occupied housing rehabs, rental housing rehabilitation, or for public facilities in low to moderate income communities, such as water and sanitary improvements. The big portion of our funds are dedicated to comprehensive projects. Those are projects that include a component of housing, public facilities, and or commercial rehabilitation projects. In 2012, we spent about $10 million rehabbing 640 units benefiting low to moderate income households in those non-entitlement communities. We also partner with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency in financing large multifamily housing rehab projects around the state. I also have here with me today our director of our community assistance program, Tom Gast, in case there are any more technical questions that you have. But with that, I would open it up to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McKinnon. Questions from committee members? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious about the commercial rehabilitation activities. Can you tell us a little bit more about what those are, and specifically, how do commercial rehabilitation investments enhance low and moderate income housing realities and opportunities?
Mr. McKinnon.
Well, Madam Chair, members, there's a couple of pieces here that I'll ask Tom Gass to come up as well, but there's a couple of pieces within this. Of course, we are, as I mentioned in our mission statement, supportive of individuals, businesses, and communities. And through that, we understand the importance of community vitality, community relationships, obviously, with attracting people or retaining people in the community, and the value of the housing stock that's there and the commercial stock that's there. But I'd like to introduce Tom Gast, who might be better suited to answer that question.
Welcome to the committee. If you'll introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. The commercial rehabs we normally do under slums and blight, so most of it's to repair those commercial buildings in the town, normally downtowns, where they want to bring them up to, sometimes they do a whole downtown to bring it all kind of facade the same way or whatever, but they're normally done under commercial. I mean, under slums and blight, not low moderate income. That's why we said not everything is done under low moderate income.
Would you just say your name for the tape, please?
Tom Gast.
And can you spell that?
G-A-S-T.
Thank you. Other questions? Any members? I have one question. Some of these are grants and some of these are loans, some of these programs. And could you just review again, if they're loans, what the interest rate is and how that compares to what might be available from other commercial banking or credit
they're
unions?
Pretty much deferred loans, so they stay in there for a period of time, and we let the city set their time frame. I think on the commercial ones, we're talking 5 to 7 years. If they stay in the property that long, they do not have to repay them. 7 to 10 on most of the owner rehab stuff. On the business loans, that will be very based on the type of what you're financing of the equipment. I think most of them are 10 years. Some of them are probably a little bit longer, but most are probably in that 7 to 10 year kind of range.
Okay, and then another question. What kind of demand do you have for any of these programs? And I imagine it varies for different ones. Do you have waiting lists? Do you have homeowners or businesses or developers that are waiting at your doorstep, or how's that going?
The demand for these programs?
Oh, demand? This year we received 80-some applications. We kind of this year we did a preliminary proposal, and we're cutting them back down, so we cut it down to 33. We'll think we'll fund somewhere in that 25 to 30 once we get our allocation. But there's a lot of demand, and it's competitive. So, I mean, basically we said no to 50-some cities this year and counties that came in asking for money. It varied. You know, some of them are public facilities. On the public facility side, we try to fill the gap with rural development. There's some large grant needs out there on water and sanitary sewer. And rural development can pick up part of it, but they can't reach all of it. So we pick up try to help them get those large projects done. And we're targeting 4 to 5 this year, I think, that we can do. Our max are $600,000 on the single-purpose grants. And on the comprehensives, it's $1.4 million. But most of them are right around $1 million. We don't get up in that $1.4 million number.
On the economic development side, Madam Chair,
on
the economic development side, about 15% of the balance. We definitely try to work with and utilize the federal program for our Minnesota Investment Fund as much as possible, but in many cases, some of the businesses do not qualify, as the wages might be too high in the area that they're located in, or they're not finding the right people with the right skills that they're needed. So they're a little bit stringent upon the 51% that you have to hire from LMI. But so typically we're not oversubscribed by too much in the federal economic development loan set.
Excuse Excuse me, 51% from LMI, and LMI means?
Sorry, low to moderate income.
Okay. Representative Bly.
I'm not sure if this is a fair question or not. I'm curious about kind of the overall kind of comprehensive plan of DEED for economic development and how what you do fits into that plan. Is there a plan like that? In the legislature, we've been talking about trying to end poverty, for instance, in by the year 2020. And I guess I'm looking for that kind of big picture, sort of how you fit into that.
Madam Chair, members, there's a variety of things that are obviously going on at any given time within DEED. Within the economic development side of DEED, I'm responsible for our business finance area, our business development area, our community assistance area, which includes not only the programs that you heard about today, but also our redevelopment programs. This has all been part of our strategy, in essence, to bring all of these groups together that are all serving businesses or communities, which ultimately serve the individuals in those areas. From a strategic standpoint, obviously with changes in leadership, we are continuing to undergo strategy sessions and thinking about how we are reaching different segments of our responsibility, which is fairly broad, individuals, businesses, and communities. But having said that, with small business, with assisting communities, which then obviously pass that on to businesses and individuals in their communities, it's always a priority for us to continue along a strategic pathway and quite frankly, be in front of you today describing what we do with federal money, obviously, which does have requirements, which does have eligibility clauses. So there's only so much we can do with some of those federal resources that we get. And on the other side of that, we're dealing with some of the general fund expenditures for programs by which you have, the legislature itself has granted DEED the authority to administer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Okay, well, I guess I have a couple more. You mentioned that you have about 50 cities in this last round that were not funded in. I'm not sure under which division was that. Was that the community development block grant?
Madam Chair, the 50 projects I believe that Mr. Gast was referring to, there was about 80 applications for the Small Cities Development Program, which is the community grant program that and loan program that we've been referencing here. As Mr. Gast mentioned, there are it is a competitive process. We are oversubscribed in many respects with 80 applicants or 80 communities or counties, cities or counties applying for these funds. And our staff at DEED have to evaluate those and recommend funding for them.
And I guess the question I'd have is two. One is, do you provide technical assistance to those counties and cities that are applying? And then secondly, do you have a map that shows where the awards did go so we can kind of say, I think one of the things that's safe to say, the committee is always interested in making sure that, you know, there's a broad distribution or that many of our needy areas, rural needy areas, are served as well as the other areas.
Yeah, we have the legislative districts where those take place in. Yeah, a number of them. They'll probably come back in next year. We'll work with them. So the ones that did not get funded this year, we've kind of changed a little bit. We were kind of doing that of a shattered approach, and we got back and started looking at our rules. I just became, I'm still acting, Director of Community Finance, and so I inherited this from another director, and we have kind of targeted, we have to, according to our rules, make some impact, and so it's about need and impact, and for a while we were doing multiple cities together, and we were coming back and doing these time and time again. And now we're measuring the impact that we're going to have. We hopefully, by doing one city and doing all its needs, we don't have to provide funding them for 3 to 5 years. That's kind of our goal. That's where we're heading. So we can spread the money around. We do a pretty good job of just about every region in the state. We go by RDC regions that applies. Most of them get some type of funding. We usually have some needy projects in each one of those regions. But we just got so much and our money's going to get smaller. We know that's going to happen. We don't know what Congress is going to do this time, but you know, we've heard at least 8%. So if it's 8% less, I'm hoping that we get the $16 million, but we may not. So when we're talking about an 8% cut, we have lost about 24% over the last 2 years. So,
Madam Chair, if I may,
Mr. McKinnon,
we can certainly provide a map of entitlement zones around the state if you're interested, and certainly do track the investments of all the deed programs, including the ones that are referenced here today, and do have that available as well for all deed awards in all legislative districts.
Okay. I'm going to get to Representative Green in just a moment. I wanted to ask you one other question. How your programs relate to some of the shortages that we know are happening around the public housing facilities, those that are falling apart around the state that have been around for a while. Are some of the cities coming in asking for helping with their money for their senior high-rises, their multifamily, or their scattered site housing? Is that part of what you're getting?
Madam Chair, yeah, my understanding that there's a number of units in the outstate area that were done by rural development that are more publicly owned. I think they were owned by individuals at one time, and I'm going back to some of the cities that bought them up. We're taking a look at those to see if we can get involved in rehabbing some of those. I don't think we won't see any this year, but hopefully next year we're working with different groups to see if we can get involved in those. But we don't do public housing directly. These are, these got to be owned and rent it out, and we meet the low moderate income requirement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions, actually. One is just clarification for me. You said that the loans were deferred after 5 to 7 years. Is that for both homeowner and business?
Not the business side. Side, most of the time, they do pay them back to the city. The city gets to create a revolving loan from it. Same thing happens with the owner rehab money and commercial rehab money. When that's paid back, it ends up in the city's coffers, and the cities have a revolving loan fund to do additional projects that are out there. And sometimes they'll attach that to come back in and apply to us, and they maybe got $20,000 or $30,000. That'll probably do. $20,000 is normally on an owner rehab. That's the size of one rehab. They get one more unit done. But also allows, if they're not ready to come in and they have an emergency need in the city, it allows them to have some money available to do that.
Okay.
President Green?
Madam Chair, thank you. And also, do you keep track of the success rate that they have within the city, like after something has been, money has been stuck into
basically
it?
Basically on the business loans. Sorry.
I'm just saying your name before you speak each time so the record is clear who's speaking.
Madam Chair and committee members, basically on the business loans, they have, there we have job requirements, and we usually 2 years after they spend them, we give them 2 years to create the jobs. After that, we do not track them.
Mr. Goss, just a clarification. So in other words, in order to get the loan, they do talk with you about the jobs that are going to be created. This is a commercial development. And if they meet the goal that they promised that they're going to do, then it could be deferred. Is that correct? Or
on the job ones, normally it's paid back.
Paid back and goes into a revolving fund.
Yeah.
Okay. And if they do not meet the goal?
They do not meet the goals. If they, we try to collect if we can. If it's less jobs, we'll probably renegotiate. Mm-hmm. Let's say we had 20 jobs and they got 10. We'll probably try to get 50% back. We have been quite successful in getting back additional money, and we'll reduce the grant. So if the grant was a $500,000 grant originally, now it's probably on the books as a $250,000.
Thank you.
And we terminate projects if all of a sudden we find out that there is no jobs, and we'll collect. Some businesses will pay us back because they realize they committed. Our grant agreements and the loan agreements have job creation goals in them.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McKinnon.
Madam Chair, and members, the reporting and monitoring forms are all mandated, obviously, by HUD and CDBG requirements that are quite intense, not only from a paperwork perspective, but also that Mr. Gast's staff are out on the ground monitoring those projects once a year, and certainly when the projects are completed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So please bear with me as I try to understand the work you do and how you do it and where your funds and grants go to. So is it my understanding that your funding now is with non-entitlement areas of the city, which is the rural community? Is that your focus and all your targets?
Mr. McKinnon?
Madam Chair, members, yes, that is our focus. That is, those are the only areas of the state in which we are eligible to spend these funds. So the city of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, St. Louis County, all of those folks get the same appropriation or allocation from HUD, and they have done their own consolidated plans that essentially meet with most of the same programs that we have. Mm-hmm. So they provide the federal money that way. We do this at DEED on behalf of the rest of the state and allow for those competitive application projects. It would be no different in Hennepin County or the city of Minneapolis, where they would also have a competitive projects, I assume, that they would be ranking as well. So yes, our focus is in these non-entitlement areas, and there are many of them and many cities, obviously, under 34,000 or whatever the limit is, that are eligible to apply.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for clarification. Is it my understanding then that through DEED you have these loan limits of 600,000 or 1.4 million, and that those are awarded to a local EDA or a county EDA? And I heard you say about the repayment of the money to that EDA, then they're able to use these funds again for another project. So is it my understanding that these funds, once granted, remain in that EDA's account in perpetuity?
Mr. McKinnon.
Madam Chair, members, that's the intent of the program, in which we are providing funds back to the city. Whether they keep those funds for other similar projects or for other eligible uses under CDBG and HUD requirements is obviously up to them. At that point, Mr. Gast?
Mr. Gast?
Yeah, normally when they come in, they file a plan, revolving loan fund plan, and most of them say they're going to use it for manufacturing, and they get to keep it in that revolving loan fund plan and use it there. So that's where most of them are.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is there any provision in this program that requires that these funds be paid back to DEED and that you can use those funds to redistribute elsewhere in the state so that you can kind of spread the achievements around the area?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Gast,
and committee members, we looked at this. It's very complicated because it's going to consider it to be program income. We have to bring it back, and then we'll be using that money versus our federal money. It doesn't work very well, so we try to leave it out there, and we kind of, if we're out in the area, we encourage them to use that, or we look at other ways that they may move those funds to better targeted areas if they do not meet the guidelines of their original revolving loan fund guidelines that they laid out. So,
okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Mariani, I think, next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's been a while since I served in housing, and it's a different scenario than we used to. Mm-hmm. Used to have. I remember SELG, which I think were, I don't know if they're still available. Those were sort of the CDBG counterparts, State Economic Opportunity Grants. Mm. I think they were tied to CDBG grants. I don't know.
Representative Mariani, I think they're in another department now. They have opportunity grants, I believe, are at DHS.
Were they?
some of them have moved over there. I'm not sure which of them, but well, actually, let's let our witnesses answer. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think they're drawing blank stares on it. So anyway, that was more just, you know, with you and me, but so we're talking about federal funds, and I am intrigued, Representative Hertaus's question about, it does look like maybe there's a way for federal funds to have a longer, you know, continual impact in our state to the degree that they can be structured inside of EDA paybacks, and they can cycle those continuously. So that's a pretty good thing, you know, because we pay federal taxes, and our ability to recycle our federal taxes several times through is not a bad thing, especially, Madam Chair, since we, as Minnesotans, tend to support other parts of the country pretty strongly, quite frankly.
Correct.
But my question then, you know, and why I brought up the SELG goes to Representative Bly's question about, it sounds like you have to work, you know, through, you know, the parameters of federal regulations here. And so I guess I think what Representative Bly was trying to get at, so what's our sense as a state legislative body with a State Department here about being able to maximize our ability to use federal funds to promote Minnesota goals that might be over and above or different in some ways than the federal requirements? It's kind of an open-ended question, really, but I think, frankly, as a legislator, I'm more interested about state departments being able to promote state goals, and then interacting with me as a policymaker about, so how do I give state departments, you know, stronger goals, you know, better tools, you know, et cetera. And I share that not because I don't think you should be doing good federal work, because I think that's important too. So it's really an open-ended question about, you know, what would you like to see from us in regards to being able to promote even better or more work across the state related to our federal funds program, or is the department just simply content with promoting whatever it is that Washington asks us to promote?
Mr. McKinn.
Madam Chair, members, as part of business and community development budget, we have this and one other program in which we receive federal dollars, all told about $17 million in federal money. So we're not as reliant upon federal dollars as other parts of our agency or some of the other state agencies as well. From a strategic perspective, we look at this, as I mentioned, in the context of economic development. And you had asked about the continuation of recycling funds. Mm-hmm. When we deal with businesses, or when we try to deal with businesses through these cities, we are able to create and recycle those funds through their loan programs that are essentially approved by us, that they will continue to implement. As it relates to the housing aspect and other community support, from a strategic perspective, as I mentioned earlier, we are very cognizant of the fact of up-to-date housing stock, the importance of this program, the importance of vital downtowns to businesses to not only attract business but also to retain them. So from a strategic perspective, I think the amount of money that we're getting from the federal government and the requirements and eligible uses of these funds today are being utilized pretty efficiently and effectively. The longer term question, I think, that gets at your what you're seeking is how do we continue to revolve these funds and make them go a lot further than they already are today. And with that, we try and do that on the business side as much as possible. We end up doing it on the housing side as well, to a certain extent. And again, I think what you heard from Mr. Gast earlier is that if we're going after cities and taking care of a city's needs, they don't have to come back to us for 3 to 5 years. that's the intent here, because cities are continually trying to update their housing stock and remove slum and blight. And so if we can address something for 3 to 5 years and then move on to other ones, I think that's been the strategy as of late.
And Madam Chair, within that, it sounds then that the driver, if you will, the agenda, really comes from the locals in that respect. Obviously, you've got, you know, what the allowable uses of the funds, you know, are, but it sounds like we have a framework in the state where it's really local cities and counties that are setting the agenda and then working with you to be able to figure out how federal funds then can drive their local agendas.
Mr. McKinnon?
Madam Chair, members, that's exactly right. The communities and the counties are coming up with plans and what they want to see locally, and then they're making application to us, and we essentially tell them the requirements and the things that they have to adhere to in order to qualify for the federal money.
And then, Madam Chair, just one final question, because it's a big state, and as I'm always constantly humbly reminded as a St. Paul legislator, that there are cities and communities that have different scale issues, you know, relative to us. Do you sense that we've got communities across the state that could be benefiting from, you know, maximal use of these investments, but perhaps are unable to because of technical abilities to structure finance deals, if you will, and or applications? I suspect that's part of what your department helps them do, but I'm also suspecting that there may be capacity issues across the state in this regard.
Mr. McKinnon?
Madam Chair, members, you're exactly right. Yes, there are communities across the state that, as we've mentioned earlier, are in line and do have programs and interesting projects that they would like to complete in their regions. The one interesting piece of this also is that with the revolving aspect of some of this, it does allow these cities and counties to keep some of the funds that they have been utilizing or been granted previously, so they can revolve that back into projects to continually support what their objectives are. The other issue that I would probably bring up as well is that there are a number of partners out there that are always in on a lot of these projects and deals, and whether it's MHFA, whether it's regional development commissions, as Mr. Gass alluded to earlier, the RDCs, and other parties around the state, it's really most of these deals are cobbled together through various sources, and to the extent possible, we try and fill those gaps to the best of our ability.
Thank you. Representative Duras, you haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to kind of piggyback off that. In my 6 years on the Elk River Economic Development Authority and time with the Elk River Housing Redevelopment Authority, we had multiple instances where we received pretty substantial grant awards through DEED aimed at job creation, and as those were paid back, we were able to use that revolving loan fund for smaller, almost gap financing type deals for businesses in and around the city of Elk River. And I think one of the things that you mentioned that makes sense is you have a pretty labor-intensive, staff-intensive application process. You know, I think red tape gets thrown around a lot, but there's hoops to jump through, and you navigate that process, and the community is awarded a pretty substantial amount of money, and then as that money is paid back, the city has, in my experience, been pretty nimble at getting that back out into the community and making an impact. I would really not prefer the idea of getting this back to the state to kind of start that cumbersome process over, and would prefer that the cities retain local control.
Thank you. That was testimony on your behalf, it sounds like. Great. Terrific. Nice to have an actual example. Representative Anderson, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could concentrate for a second on the funding you have available for the public facilities, there's a huge need in outstate Minnesota for water and sewer work, especially with the EPA and MPCA guidelines coming down again. And your handout says 30% goes to that category, which is about under $5 million. Is that the only source of funding for our small towns to access grants, or where does PFA fit in, or how much is available for our small cities?
Madam Chair and committee members, PFA also gets some grant money or has some grant money available, so they are also our partners at times in these projects. Minnesota Housing, Rural Development also gets involved, USDA. So there are partners in trying to get some of these high communities have high grant need. We did some systems, some engineers did some systems here a few years back that they tried something new, and they haven't worked very well. So we're coming in and we're picking up some of those projects now. It's a very, very small communities, but those communities are still thriving communities. I mean, they're bedroom communities, they're larger towns that have manufacturing jobs and that type of thing. So, yeah, we try to work together, all of us, with PCA also. But with our all large housing need for rehab, and a number of projects that are ready to go every year, we're kind of getting down to, it appears to be 4 to 5 good projects that are ready to go, and that's the ones we get involved in that have the huge grant need.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up. You mentioned that the cities that applied and were not accepted would be kind of higher on your list next time around. I had a small town in my district that applied for money from DEED, didn't get it. So are you promising or saying that they'll be higher up on the totem pole next year?
Representative Anderson, that's a fair question.
Yeah, we don't make any promises. Again, we look at everything with the other programs out there and see if the need is still there, and if it still requires a grant need. If it does, we'll look at it.
Okay. I have two more people who have asked for questions, and I know you have some limited time. Can we keep you a little longer today than you thought you could? Okay, good. So, Representative, did you finish?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's already been asked and answered again. So,
all right, thank you, Representative Hartus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we've been having this discussion, you know, it occurred to me that these sums are made as direct loans to offer assistance for economic development. And a hypothetical, or something I'm just curious about, is there any leverage or provision to leverage these funds where? Similar to like tax increment financing districts, applicants, you know, would meet the test of being able to repay these loans, but where you could really get more projects going at a single time by buying down the rate with the use of these funds, by subsidizing the interest rate that a commercial entity would maybe be subjected to borrowing based on their income or their risk level, rather than a 6 or 7 or 8 or 10% operating loan. You buy that down with points or discount points. Is that permissible under the program,
Mr. McKenna?
Madam Chair, members, in reference to probably the first part of your question, you're asking. When a financing package is put together, and we are part of that financing package to essentially make the deal work. In many cases, we're dealing with projects that might be 6 months out, they might be 12 months out, so they're not necessarily ready to go. That's one of the most important, I think, key aspects of our programs at DEED, is we want to work with people that are ready to go now, so once our funds are in there, the project can now get started. As far as the uses related to whether or not our loans go into buy down interest rate or part of the financing package, I'm not exactly sure if that's allowable. I'll have Mr. Gast ask or answer that question. But at the same time, I think the important part here is that our grant money or the funds when we end up coming in are typically one of the last financing sources into this to make the project work.
Madam Chair.
Can I answer your question? Oh, Mr. Guest.
Madam Chair and committee members. Basically, we're in for a very small portion of most projects, sometimes as low as maybe 10 or 15%. Normally not, probably more than 25%. Most of our money is loaned at low interest rates, so therefore we are buying down the total package when we're doing those deals. And we're subordinate financing, so if the deal does go south, we probably, cities probably don't get paid back. Sometimes we get some creative ways of getting collateral if we can. We try to encourage them to get the best collateral they can, because we all know working with companies, it's very, very difficult to pick winners. Even you can look at, I mean, I had a project many years ago where I thought it was a slam dunk. I basically didn't want to do it, but I was being, hey, this is a good project. So I did it, and I came back. I was looking at it a year later. How come I'm not getting jobs? What's going on here? And so I happened to be in the area, so I stopped in and seen the CEO, and the CEO says, Tom, I'm sorry, but we missed it. We did not expand fast enough. And because we did not expand fast enough, our competitors stole our business. They're back. They're a big company today. They're a thriving company. But sometimes that happens. You even they can't get things right. They try their best, but even they can't do that.
Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This here is a good example of how if you just hang around, you know, more and more questions come out.
Okay.
But it's good. It's all, I mean, there's good exploration here. So we're talking about $16 million, and that's annually, is that right?
Okay.
Yeah. So $16 million, you know, obviously it sounds like a lot of money, but actually for a state this big, that's like not even close to a little bit of money. And we've been talking a lot about projects. And, you know, the kind of deals that, you know, those projects involve. And so obviously, 55% of that to comprehensive projects, 15% to economic development projects. I suspect we are indeed talking about, relative to those projects, pretty small amounts, but obviously critically important, you know, to be able to make the margins, which I think is the arguments here. But let me focus us on the housing, owner-occupied housing rehabilitation. So, you know, kind of working our way back, you know, from, you know, Joe Citizen, the owner-occupied, you know, person who's participating in some local program, you know, for housing rehabilitation connected with low, moderate income, stabilizing communities, et cetera. Do these funds then, relative to Joe Citizen, are these funds part of other mixes that make it possible for Joe Citizen to, you know, have a loan, et cetera. On average, what are we talking about in terms of CDBG proportion? Is that like $200 per 1,000, 10,000? I mean, what's the scale here for a citizen to think about how CDBG becomes very real in their life relative to accessing these rehabilitation loans?
Madam Chair and committee members, primarily most of the rehabs, the maximums are $20,000 okay. That we participate in. There's also other monies available out there that most of our providers are either CAF agencies or HRAs, so they have other sources that they get involved in these projects. And even if there's a consultant, some in our outstate areas, we don't have HRAs or CAFs. We have consultants that year after year do these rehab projects and have on staff, but they in turn also know the other sources that are available and try to stretch it as much as they can. So that's how we get these projects done, because they're rehabbing houses is not cheap either nowadays.
It gives me a sense of you know, not only broad scope but applicability to the citizen. You have to guess per year, how many homeowners are we talking about statewide?
Mr. Guest? Madam Chair and committee members, in 2012, we did about 640 households. So.
And then, Madam Chair, if I press you a little bit more, if we were to take the universe of need, and I'm not arguing that government needs to fill in the entire universe that need, but it's good to know. Mm-hmm. 640 against what would be otherwise eligible eligible households. What are we talking about in terms of making an impact in the state? Are we hitting 10%, 50%, 80% of those per need per year?
Mr. Guest.
Madam Chair and Committee Members, we talk to guess what that number is. I mean, I think we are reaching most of them in the cities that, that do come in and do get accepted as applications. I think we are spending the money once in a while. We revert a few dollars. We just roll that back in and make it available in the next year. So we keep every dollar flowing. None of it goes back to the Fed. So some programs, they don't spend it. It ends back up in the federal coffers. This program, that doesn't happen. We're allowed to carry it forward. So sometimes... And right now, we give them kind of 30 months, too. That's probably important for you to know, to complete. If we're going to give them a $500,000 grant, we're giving them 30 months to get it done. And most of them are coming in somewhere in that 15 to 20 units per community. So we can make a fairly good impact. And in that time frame, it's hard to get them off the ground. First, with the marketing aspect, let them know that they got the money and that type of thing. But once we get them off the ground, they move pretty good, and we get them done in those 30 months. And if we got a little bit of change left on the end, that comes back to us, and we just roll it into next year's pot. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I had just one other question. Thank you. Those are really good questions, committee members. I think we're all understanding this program.
You have a smart committee, man.
I know. I'm pleased. Very pleased. Your question, Representative Mariani, sparked me to think about the governor's budget, and we're going to be talking about that, I believe, next week. But it would be helpful to us to know what the impact of the governor's budget might be on this program today. Since you're here, if you want to say anything about that, that'd be my first question.
Madam Chair, members, from a budgetary perspective, part of our match and part of the funding that we do provide is having the staff here at DEED to administer this program. It's important for us to maintain those staffing levels, obviously, to administer these programs in the way that we're supposed to from the federal government perspective. At the same time, from a budgetary perspective, obviously, in the economic development side, there are four pieces that the governor had introduced directly related to our aspect of this. As it relates to the housing side, we obviously are very focused on our CDBG allocation from HUD. And anything that will be happening around that, we don't know as of this point how funding levels would deteriorate. We do not have other programs within the state today, from our agency perspective, that address some of the housing needs that we're talking about today. So whatever happens in that respect might be interesting to find out how that's going to impact the rest of the housing piece from a state perspective. Again, from a budgetary perspective, our funding that we do get for normal operations is incredibly important, obviously, so we can have the staff to implement and effectively manage these programs.
Okay, I think I have to wait for the real answer for part of it, because you're not quite sure, it sounds like, and we could maybe... We'll be having the governor's people in front of us, and we can ask them more questions, I guess, related to this, if you're not quite sure, it sounds like.
Madam Chair.
In terms of staffing, is that right?
Members, in terms of staffing, yes. The ongoing support of, obviously, DEED operations, we rely upon general fund money, obviously, to fund the staff that address this. And we also, with the four initiatives, essentially, that we have announced, Kim Babine is here, actually, from DEED as well, okay. Who might want to talk a little bit more specifically about that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm Kim Babine, the legislative director at DEED. And I think the question that you're getting to is if there are any pieces in the governor's budget that affect DEED's general operations or anything around this housing program, and there are not. The change items that are within DEED are separate from this. They're in our economic development area and our UI area, but right now there are no proposed cuts to general operating expenses, allocations for the agency, or anything around staffing around this program.
Okay, great. Thank
is that
you so
your
much.
Question?
Yes, it is. I was just wondering, give you a chance while you're here to tell us.
Thank you.
Okay, I have one other question. I know one of the other bills, programs that you administer that has housing as a very important part of it, I didn't hear mentioned, is the Youth Build Program. And I happen to know that the last time they reported to us, those young people who built and constructed housing constructed something like $16 million worth of housing, an amazing amount when you think they're not a housing agency, and that would be a huge number in terms of our housing budget at MHFA if it were considered part of their budget. I mean, it's relatively huge compared to zero. So you didn't mention it today. Are you familiar with that program? And if not, maybe, you know, we'll get to hear about it later.
I think, Madam Chair, members, the reason we didn't bring that forward today is because it's administered as a pass-through grant, and so we definitely could have and can do so in the future. My apologies for your interest around that program. I don't have the specifics in front of me to speak to it today.
Well, maybe that just raises the question, are there any other pass-through grants relating to housing in your agency that we should be reminded about?
I will, not that I know.
Okay.
So
you can check it out.
I'll check it out.
Okay, great.
Yes,
Representative Mariani.
I'll ask the real dumb question, but how does a pass-through grant, how is that distinctive from, say, this, what we just heard, because those are federal funds that we're not appropriating. They're like, to me, they look like they're passing through. Mm-hmm. So how do we distinguish that when we say that pass-through grant and youth bill versus CDBG, for example?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, it probably wasn't the best choice of words on my, because they're they are similar. The youth build program is through on our workforce side and through the Workforce Development Fund, and so it was overlooked in this. So the distinction isn't a good one.
And so, Madam Chair, we'll hear more about youth build
yes.
at some point. And we'll
oh, you, know what you better believe it, yeah. Representative Mariani.
I suspect, knowing you, I suspect so.
one of the programs I really appreciate so much. Any other questions, comments? Okay, well, I thank you for your time, and committee members, thank you for your attention. And for today, we're going to adjourn in just a moment. We're going to hear at our next meeting on Wednesday, we're going to hear from the Veterans Administration part of the housing, the part that they have to do with housing. It's often not considered a place necessarily where housing goes through, but it does. And then we're also going to hear from the governor's perspective on the governor's budget related to housing. So until then, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.